with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I am well. Thank you for asking. And I know you're doing good, and I know that not just because of this trade, but it could be the start of something pretty fun.
Well, you know what's so funny? You have a Friday news dump, right? It's Friday afternoon. We're like, you know, the troop group chat is like, you know, relatively quiet because everybody's like, you know, either settling into their Friday plans or whatever. And then like in the afternoon, we're like, wait, what? Kyrie demands trade. We're like, oh God, here we go. Right. And it just starts this sort of mad dash the next 48 hours. So what ends up happening is the trade actually happened, right? The Nets acquiesced. Kyrie was sent to the Dallas Mavericks for Spencer Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smiths, a first round pick and 2 second round picks. The first round pick is in 2029 and it is unprotected. The second round picks are from 2027 and 2029. For a team like the Brooklyn Nets, who gave away control of their draft for the next 5 years in the James Harden trade, having draft capital is important for a lot of reasons, but we'll get to the Nets part of this later. I want to start on the Dallas side. David, when you heard that Dallas made the trade, what was your initial reaction?
Right away, I thought desperate teams will make mistakes more so than a team that's not desperate. And whether or not it's a mistake, there's no question Dallas was desperate. Things were slipping away. You know, we know a superstar can get just bored with and or frustrated with their team. And this to me was, okay, we're gonna show you we're willing to take some chances here. And it's a risk. There's always a risk. I don't ultimately love it. We'll talk about it a lot, I'm sure. But I thought it was a desperate team in Dallas's case. And I thought in Brooklyn's case, bravo. Get that guy off your roster right away. Reporting now is coming out that basically the owner said, just don't send him to the Lakers because that's what he wants. Mm-hmm. So this was a little bit of that. I don't really like vengeance, but this was his way of doing it. Billionaires know how to dish out vengeance. Wow. That's for sure. But I like what they got. I think Brooklyn, Nate Duncan put it really well. Probably lowers their ceiling a little bit, but raises their floor. I couldn't say it any better. I was thinking the same thing. They're not quite as accomplished on the high side, but they're probably going to be better most nights with what they have. And we'll get into all the details as to why. But I thought Brooklyn did a nice job. I think it's a well-run franchise. We'll talk about that too.
Yeah, I thought similar. And as I said to you guys on the phone and you know, in our group chat, you're not going to replace 27 points a game, 50, 40, 90, and the talent that Kyrie Irving oozes from his fingernail, right? Like, it just there's no like for like. No. You're not getting that back in return. But what you are getting in Spencer Dinwiddie and Dorian Finney-Smith and those draft picks, at least from the player's standpoint, you're getting two guys, drama-free, who will show up to work, right? So, again, to your point, ceiling, definitely not as high. But every day, everybody in the locker room knows, barring injury, those dudes are coming to work. And they're going to put their best foot forward. Sometimes addition by subtraction is a thing, right? Not having to wonder or sort of sit on eggshells saying, oh my God, what's going to happen this week? None of that, right? We're just going, we're going to play ball.
Well,
again, we'll get to...
But Gerard, just let's make sure we address this. It's not like they traded for two stiffs that are going to show up to work. Dinwiddie is borderline elite offensively. Mm-hmm. Finney-Smith, borderline elite defensively. Mm-hmm. Experienced veteran guys. One has a history with Shaq Von in Brooklyn and Dinwiddie. Mm-hmm. And they have what you said, which is just professional basketball players that I maybe told this story once before, but I want to make this point for you, for what your point is. I heard someone talking about Amy Poehler when she was on Parks and Rec was telling, I think, her ex-husband, Will Arnett, about Rob Lowe's first day on the job at Parks and Rec. And Will Arnett was like, how'd it go? You know, what was it like? Because he had been such a big movie star and then did TV with West Wing. And Amy Poehler said, well, when he shot his first scene, we were watching. Maybe they were even performing, I don't know. But I don't think Amy was performing. And she said the group was like, oh, this guy's a pro. Like, this guy knows every little thing. He's done all before so many times. That's what I thought of. This guy's going to show up early. They're going to stay late. They're not going to miss assignments. They're going to ask the right questions. They're going to study film. Like they're just, every box will check. And they're really good players. Maybe Dinwiddie a little better. And then to your point, and they're not going to have to worry about what tweet do they say? What's the next drama going to be? There just isn't going to be one, almost for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can never say for sure, but almost right. For sure, right? Pretty much put it in the bank. Your bank isn't secure totally, but pretty damn right. Secure.
Pretty good.
I think Brooklyn valued that, especially after what they went through.
And that matters for sure. All right, let's look at Brooklyn. Obviously, you mentioned Mark Cuban, Nico Harrison, the GM, Jason Kidd, all signed off on this. There's worry, right, that Luka may, you know, do what superstar players like him do, which is voice frustration within the organization and make things uncomfortable the way superstars in this league can do, because they matter, right? When you have one of those guys, and Luka is one of those guys, they can tilt the fortunes of your franchise. He needs help. Okay, on the floor, it sounds like, at least offensively, this sounds brilliant to me, right? You got Luka, the maestro, controlling things. Kyrie can work off the ball. He can work on the ball. When you're spraying the ball out to Kyrie in the corners, he can attack off the dribble. He can shoot it. He can create for somebody. He can do a lot of things, right? That's an upgrade. Now, how long he does that without any drama, can't predict that, right? But given his track record and his past history, we can't say for sure for long. But I think offensively, that's a nice upgraded piece for them. And they're going to, I think, find a way to coalesce. Like we always say, though, Coach, this doesn't happen overnight. Like, guys got to, it takes some time to build chemistry and work things out. We're already at past the 50 game mark. So we're going to have, I don't know, 28 games or so, 27. That's not a whole lot of time to develop chemistry. So I think on the court, the potential could be good just in a vacuum, but I don't know if they're going to have enough time to get everything together and work it out the way they would like to.
Well, I think that the fit is great in terms of how Kyrie likes to play and how the Mavericks play. They are ISO-based to begin with. But he isn't that... I think Spencer is a Kyrie not so light. He's a very good offensive player that shoots career-high 40% from three, driver, can pass, can play make, as can Kyrie. I think that the offensive fit will be good right away. It may be great in time. That's going to take some time, but it has that potential by postseason. I think very importantly, Kyrie can control a team in a way Spencer can't when Luka's out. 0-7 without him. So I think that matters to some degree, that it's not just almost a definite loss if Luka's not playing. But it's the other side that worries me. Remember, they were number eight in offense for the season, probably better than that the last 2.5 months. So what are they going to be, number seven, number six, number five? Like, pick a number. I don't think they'll be number one. They're going to be hard to guard, for sure. But who are they stopping?
Well,
they still have deal. They still have time. I don't know what they have to offer, but they have, you know, they have time to go get some help. Maxi Kleber returns. That'll help their offense and maybe their defense a little bit. But either way, I think that this was a desperate move by a desperate team. And it's unlikely to produce what you hope for this year. And then they've made no promises to him.
Right, correct.
If they don't sign him, they're going to have plenty of money to spend in the offseason for somebody else, which is what they're going to weigh, is who else can we get before we offer this guy? Yeah.
And I think, you know, you and I come from the same school of thought on this, is that, like, we don't know of any team that wants to get into the long-term Kyrie Irving business.
Well, right? I don't think any team does right now. They're not willing to commit. Yeah, they're not willing to commit.
Four years and 250, whatever. That's
right.
That's crazy talk.
How many playoff series has he got injured in or not played in at all in the last 9 years? Four or five?
Several.
Yeah, four or five. I think four. Maybe he's played in five and not played in four. Like, he is, there's an injury risk. He's, and as he ages too, there's the mental part of the game. I don't think, I've said this many times, he is not a selfish player, in my opinion.
No.
He's not a chucker, a gunner. But he is an energy sucker. He definitely was more of the problem than solution in Boston. And in Cleveland, he wanted to leave, and maybe rightfully so, but let's face it. He could have been there this whole time, and they're really good, as I know you know, and interesting, and we'll talk about them later in the show. He's just different. And different's fine, but on a culture, on a team, it can cause problems. It always has for him before.
Well, this is the interesting part you mentioned about culture. So in Shams reported for The Athletic, the Mavericks said they believe their culture is the right type to deal with Kyrie Irving. I was like, your culture? You mean the one where you had toxic masculinity going on? You accused the GM of sabotaging. You threw.
How about Perella the coach? How about the coach they hired?
Right, Jason. I don't think your culture is that great, my guys.
And the only good thing about the culture is it's in Texas, so there won't be any vaccine or mask issues in that red damn state. He'll be one of the more ironic heroes of that state, given you know his situation and the fact that he does see eye to eye with the average you know Trumper in Texas.
It is it's just crazy, but I'm with you. I you know again. I think the reason why the Mavericks did it, of course, is desperation. But here's what they also probably looked at, David, and you'd agree with this. Mm-hmm. They look at the Western Conference and they're like, there's no superstar dominant team that's like clearly way better than everybody else. So they figure, and if we, as we said before, in any series in the Western Conference against any potential team, they can argue we have the best player on Luka Doncic, right? That can go in any series. If we have Kyrie, we got what? At worst, the third best player? Sometimes the second best player? So I think in their mind, they're like, okay, we can, if we just, yeah, we'll suck on defense, but good luck stopping us. And maybe that's their thinking also and why they pulled the trigger.
I don't think there's any question to that. I think you're exactly right. I think they're feeling like Denver's the best team in the West. Who's going to guard Kyrie and Luka on their team? I think Denver's also asking the same questions. Mm-hmm. And Dallas is thinking, well, I'm not sure we can guard them either, but in a shootout, we'll take Luka and Kyrie over Jokic and Jamal Murray. I really think that's what they're thinking. And I get it. What I'm saying is I don't trust Kyrie at all.
Right.
And if something's going to go wrong, it's going to go wrong on a team Kyrie's involved with. This is how I feel. Until he proves me wrong. I always believe, I'm not one of these guys who says, well, you know, they're the champions, so if someone proves me wrong, I don't believe in any of that stupid stuff. I am an evidence-based analyst. And so I don't have to see any evidence that he can keep it going for a long period of time in a positive way. This latest example, he could have stayed in Brooklyn on a team that I think had a better chance
against the KD. Good.
They're really good, deep as hell. And they could have made some moves to get, hell, they could have got, they don't need Dorian Finney-Smith. They could have got other players and kept a Kyrie for the guarantee he's getting in Dallas. So I think he'll just find a way to screw it up. And the West is, I mean, Memphis has dropped 8 of 9. Mm-hmm. Steph Curry's out for undetermined amount of time. Mm-hmm. At least a month, they're saying.
I think so. Yeah.
Wow. Denver doesn't guard great. Mm-hmm. The Clippers have been, still think they're going to be good. The Lakers are laughable.
Like Pelicans have lost 10 of Pelicans 11 or something.
Yeah, 10 of 11. Yeah. So, I mean, Utah is good. They're, you know, no one expected that at 500.
Right.
I think that, Dallas feels like, all right, we didn't get worse in their mind. I think they might have because of their defense, but it very well could be a net neutral or even a slight positive uptick. And that may be what's needed in this situation because it's so much parity.
Yeah, which we predicted at the beginning of the season, right? Yeah. There'd be a lot of parity. It's like, which in the Western Conference is, I mean, the whole league, but it's really evident there. Yeah. All right, shift things to the Brooklyn side. You know, I thought, David, wow, this is a better return than I thought they'd get because I figured, well, who's going to give up anything of value for that dude for all the reasons we mentioned? We mentioned Finney-Smith and Spencer Dinwiddie. They are better than just two stiffs. They are starter level, above average NBA players.
With playoff experience.
With playoff experience.
They're not kids.
That matters. The draft capital matters.
Yeah.
And the other piece here is that
they Brooklyn save money too.
Yes, they're going to save money on the cap.
Four million this year, like, and 40 in tax.
Or 40 in, like, yeah, it, yeah. 40 in tax. It's great. They have draft capital back because they don't have any right now because of the James Harden trade, as I mentioned. And they can still move Dinwiddie, Finney-Smith, and those picks. They now have things with the Joe Harris expiring, all these Patty Mills, whomever, all these pieces now and money to do something else. So whether that's get a backup big because they're like, look, we need some help to give Claxton when we go up against Giannis and Embiid. We figure with Durant doing his normal thing with those guys, we feel pretty good about our team. As you mentioned on the phone this morning, in a series, the team stays the way they are now. In a series against Milwaukee, that'll be 88-85 because they got a defensive lineup they can throw out there that can guard their asses off. It'll be ugly basketball, but hey, sometimes you got to win ugly, right?
If you got to play Ben Simmons in that group and Claxton, there's two non-shooters. Milwaukee's number three in defense, I think, right now. It would be a game like it was in the 90s. Yeah. The game we play in the 80s as if we were in the 90s. But yeah, they also can go more offensive firepower. They've got great defensive depth at the wing. They have multiple wing defenders that can guard the Giannis's and Jimmy Butler's and Tatum's and those guys. That's Tobias Harris, who's playing great. Mm-hmm. That's really valuable. Yeah, they need probably more little help in the front court, I think. Mm-hmm. And then you know, let's not bury the lead, which is, and we're gonna. I think we're writing about this now based on a phone call this morning. You brought it up first thing this morning. Where's KD with all of this?
Yes, where is KD with all this? That's the question we're asking. And I think KD had to get some kind of nod of approval from KD before they went ahead with the moves that they did. We turned out the Lakers did make an offer. The 27 and 29 first round picks were included, but the Nets wanted more. They wanted Reeves and all the young guys.
What does KD
guy,
care about those picks?
Well, right, because that doesn't matter to him. So, and as Mark Stein reported, Josiah was like, I'm not sending him to the Lakers. We can get into how we feel about pettiness later, but is what it is. The Suns offered Chris Paul, Jay Crowder, and picks. And I think if you're looking at it, KD's got to be like, Chris Paul's a name that I know. Jay Crowder's a name that I know. But right now, I think you could make the argument that Dinwiddie and Finney Smith are better than Chris Paul and Jay Crowder right now.
Well, probably because Crowder hasn't played all season. Correct. So you don't know what kind of shape he's kept himself in. We can only assume. We don't know. I want to think, and I have no reporting on this, but I want to think that the Nets, who are a well-run franchise, we're going to get into that in a minute, I think they must have sat down with Durant and maybe even said, okay, here's the list of teams that have contacted us. We're not going to give you all the details. You don't need to know them. But we know we need wing defensive help depth-wise. We have Royce O'Neal. That's pretty much it. Who do you, of all these guys, who do you think is going to help us the most defensively against the kind of guys we're going to see in the playoffs? And I could see that's a great thing to ask Kevin Durant. I don't think just asking players for a lot of details is always a good idea for lots of reasons, but I do think that's a really good one. KD, who would you least like to play against? Because that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. And I could see him saying, Finney Smith is challenging. I'll score on him like anyone, but I got to work. That's all we're asking for. So now we got two guys in O'Neal and him and Ben Simmons. Mm-hmm. Two guys can shoot. One guy can't. Mm-hmm. All three can really defend. So,
and KD himself.
And then you throw in KD, of course, who doesn't want to defend those guys more than possessions here and there, mm-hmm. because you need him so much offensively, which you do. Especially when Dinwiddie's out, you're really going to need KD. Yeah. Unless Ben Simmons transforms, which no one expects anymore. I don't expect anymore.
Right.
So I think KD probably said, I'd be shocked if he didn't say, yeah. Because I've been asking, where's he at? You would think he already has chimed in. But players change their minds fast. So
for sure.
I wouldn't say the future is written yet.
No, definitely not. And I think the way I see it, and you're right, I have not asked around about this yet. I'll start to do that. My feeling, David, is that KD signs off on this. I think Brooklyn makes another move, and we can talk about what we think that other move might be. And they play out this string. Because look, they're still for fourth in the East, right? Like, he comes back and goes back to his normal MVP self. This team is easily a top four playoff team. They play it out, see where we end up in the postseason. Depending on how that turns out, the summertime, I think, could be illustrative, right? If it doesn't go well, if it's not the right guys, the Nets can say, look, here's Kevin Durant, still at this age, an MVP caliber player, got under contract for 3 more years. The potential haul they can get back for him in the summer is greater than what they can get back for him right now. And so I think that's also an option for them. And that could allow them to rebuild with picks, young talent, and not be terrible, because Houston's getting the picks that they have. Houston has control over the next five years anyway, but they can still get back draft capital and young guys and make this work out. So the Nets are doing what's best for them right now on both ends. Okay, let's play it out, KD. See how we do this year. You'll give us that. We'll give you that. If it doesn't work, we'll see what we can get for you this summer. That's, I think, a realistic possibility on the table.
So I don't want to change the subject too much, but I want to ask you this as someone who's connected in Brooklyn. I'm reading some people writing that they think there's more truth than ever that KD and Harden will go back to Houston after the season. I find that to be ludicrous.
That sounds crazy to me.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah, that sounds crazy to me.
I've done some reporting on this, my background stuff, with very high-level people with Harden who have said, anything's possible. Right. But we're not, this is, these are people involved saying we're not promoting that. Yeah. It's just ridiculous to promote something like that.
I think the whole idea about Harden going back to Houston is just so his people let Daryl know, hey, we gave you a break this go round. Like, we want to get paid.
Yeah.
Is what I'm thinking that's about. Yeah. But I can't, Houston, I can't see that happening.
And
I
mean, so, look,
anything's possible. But
yeah. So let's talk about the Nets a little bit more. I think they took I think they made a mistake in trying to get Harden with KD and Kyrie. I think they made a mistake putting Kyrie and KD together because I don't trust Kyrie. I think they made a mistake adding Harden to the group. That doesn't mean they're not really smart guys who I think have run a very good franchise. And I think this is evident of that. They gave Steve Nash a whirl. I get it. Two-time MVP, really cerebral player. It worked out great, and then it didn't, and they changed. With enough time to let Jacques Vaughn do his thing, it's his team now. Mm-hmm. He seems to be doing great. Mm-hmm. I think he's respected and liked from people I've talked to. I like their roster. I like the roster construction and the way they play. I also think they have the best G League team. And there's some players on the G League team that are very good players that have NBA potential. They bring their guys from the roster down, like De'Ron Sharp, who's played mm-hmm. some down there and done well.
Kessler Edwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kessler Edwards, right. So they've got a great, the most impressive coach I've seen in the G League is Ronnie Burrell from the Long Island Nets. I don't know him at all. But I think they run real. They play amazing defense with guys that go up and down from the varsity and not from the NBA, and it doesn't matter. And they've won, I think, 8 straight. They're dominating the league without some of their best players sometimes. I think, you know, their best player for sure is David Duke Jr., who's I think should be MVP of the G League because he's the best player on the best team. Who knows what will end up happening? He's with the Nets all the time. They still win mm-hmm. without mm-hmm. their best player. That's a franchise win. Gerard, that's a franchise win. Yeah. A couple years ago, I was watching the Memphis Hustle a lot. Yuta Wannabe was like their third best player. Mm-hmm. John Conchar was their second or third best player, both those guys. And they were the best team until they started moving guys up. And the kid from Kansas they had, I forget his name, the lottery pick that's maybe out of the league now. I think he's maybe in Detroit. He was on the team. And now look what happened with Memphis. They got John Morant. Everything took off. Mm-hmm. Well-run franchises win at both levels. Yeah. If they don't win, they're developing. Yep. So Long Island is stable. They're solid. Yep. They're better than solid. They're very good. And now they have this draft capital, like you say, and they've got some of these other young players. Cam Thomas just went off for 44 the other night.
He was incredible Saturday night.
As a second-year player. Yeah, they've got a bright future. They've got, you know, KD should feel okay, like, hey, these guys know what they're doing. Why would I go anywhere? I'm gonna have a chance with these guys.
So I think that's the ultimate question here, because again, I think we both think Brooklyn's not gonna be done moving things before Thursday. Do they opt for let's just get the backup big and rock with what we have, or do they try to figure out, because with the contracts they have now and the capital, they can pull away and get another all-star level type of player. If I told you they could move, I mean, I wouldn't do it, but Claxton, you get the salaries to match, and one of those picks they have now, that unprotected first from Dallas, to potentially get Siakam. Would you do it?
Why are you asking me about him? Because I'm asking for a reason. Any reason why?
That's
what we're hearing.
That's a name that, you know, yeah, we're for sure. hearing. And it's also, Toronto seems like a team that they're for sure. We know they love Scotty. That's a guarantee. That I know. Yeah. Everybody else, I don't know. I think they're all in play.
I don't think the Raptors do that, but for sure I would do that if I was them. If I was Brooklyn, yeah. You can find, first of all, with Pascal, you're going to have the best offense, and KD, you're going to have the best offense in the league with Spencer and all the shooters you have. So you just got to play decent defense. This is what Dallas is thinking. And I think they have, because of those wings, as opposed to Dallas, who has none of those guys, they'll have Siakam, KD, Ben Simmons, and Royce O'Neal, and mm-hmm. and maybe Finney Smith, too, if they keep all of them. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of guys that can play defense. They just got to find solid big guys that play good position defense. But I would do that. I would look at it this way. What is our risk reward for each situation? If we think we have KD for a couple of years, we want to make sure we're contending all three of those years. I don't know how many years left he has in his deal.
Three after this year.
So, yeah, so three after this year. So I want to make sure we contend all of it because I want him to be happy, and he deserves that. And so I've got to do things that make sure we're in contention for those years.
Yeah, so it's just something that, you know, we, again, we've heard. But as you know, and as David always likes to say, what you constantly hear about is not likely to happen, right? There's a reason, right?
Well, look at this trade.
Correct.
ESPN report on Friday, Tim McMahon reported that Dallas was interested in Kyrie Irving. I'm not criticizing Tim or ESPN. That is news with a lowercase n. Because who isn't really, you know, team that was below the contending status and wanted to contend had to at least check in. Mm-hmm. But that was it. Boom, then the deal's done. There was no 8, 9, 10 different reports.
Right.
Normally it's quiet. The deals that get done are ones that are talked about or written about.
Yeah. Now, it'll be interesting to see what Brooklyn does. Again, I don't think they're done. And look, you have to give Sean Marks some credit here. It looked like disaster was happening. And, oh, my God, what are they going to do? They still – look,
come out good.
They're recapping. They're clearing up cap space. They're saving money in the luxury tax, which Josiah loves. They're going to be okay, I think. And I wanted to finish at this point with Josiah. You mentioned you don't love the idea of being vindictive and saying don't send him to L.A. I remember I said this on the show. Josiah, a billionaire running Alibaba, the Chinese Amazon, basically, right? Their e-commerce online platform. And I'm like, we do a lot of work with billionaires around here. I like to think that I know a few billionaires. I kind of have a little bit of insight into their minds and how they think in their real world, in their business. They don't take too kindly to employees that they pay a lot of money to who don't deliver results. That is not something that they abide by at all. In their regular capitalist business enterprises. I was like, I can't imagine he's loving this Kyrie thing right now. So there's no doubt in my mind. He's probably like, do not send him where he wants to go. He thinks this is the thing. I don't care. We're not sending him there. And
I will confess that I'm similar. If I was ever in position and had those opportunities some to run a team, I've said this and written this, I would tell teams. I even said this when I talked about LaMelo Ball when he was in the draft, that I would have sat him down and said, as soon as your dad starts attacking my management team, my coaches, or your teammates, you're traded, and it won't be to a team that you like. I have such little leverage. I'm going to use that as part of leverage of I'm going to make your life harder because now look what you've done to me. It's the only thing I can do. I can't punch you in the face or wouldn't. Right. So it's not a great look for the NBA. We're going to talk about looks in the NBA later on, but it's part of the world that we live in. And I don't have a problem with it. Kyrie, you made us, we paid you all this money. You got so little back. I understand injuries happen, but the other shit you pulled, I don't understand. And so you're out of your mind if you think we're going to send you the Lakers. Yeah. Yeah. I got to believe that the Lakers wanted Mike Conley and not Pat Bev, but I don't think Danny Ainge is helping the Lakers. He fucking hates the Lakers.
Danny Ainge is definitely
that's his privilege. Yes. You're in that decision-making process and it's worked out just fine for them. Yeah.
It has. No, it'll be interesting. So yeah, I'll be in Brooklyn later today and I'll see what is happening. Right? Yeah, they play tonight. They play the Clippers tonight. So I don't, just for listeners, Kyrie is expected to be in Dallas on Monday, go through his physical, and play in their game on Wednesday. I have not heard anything about Spencer and Dorian doing anything yet, which tells us something, which means let's not get too comfortable. They're going to be
right.
Let's put it this way: Dorian and Spencer don't start looking for Brooklyn real estate quite yet.
I wouldn't even unpack your suitcase.
Might not. Just stay tight. We'll see how things shake out come Thursday. All right, Coach. Again, Dallas makes a move because they're desperate. Another reason why there's desperation in the West, Stephen Curry injured his leg last Friday, whatever
Saturday,
that
maybe.
Game was, Saturday. And so here's what happened, and this is Golden State putting it out there. The Golden State Warriors guard Stephen Curry exited the game against the Mavericks with a lower left leg injury. And he suffered partial tears to his superior tibiofibular ligaments and his interosseous membrane, as well as contusions to his lower left leg. All that is to say, that's the part of the body that deals with your tibia, your knee, like that, all that whole situation there. And ligaments are damaged there, torn. He's got contusions. This is an issue, right? I mean, this is arguably the best player in the league, right? Like, on a team that definitely needs him to win. They are defending champions. Now, even with him playing, they're still basically a 500 team, right? He did miss some time. This now, you know, the vaunted Warriors are, they're shaking, right? And they're in ninth, I want to say right now, last time I checked, somewhere around there. They're going to need to kind of maintain water, at least stay 500 until he comes back. Now, various reports, Golden State hasn't put out an official timeline. Shams and Woj are saying it's at least through the All-Star break. A couple of those, Jeff Stotts, the injury management guy, you'll see a lot of his stuff on NBA Twitter. An injury like this, he's saying, is typically at least a month. It's a rare one in the NBA, so they don't have a whole lot of database reference points to go back to. Let's put, again, even it's going to be at least a couple weeks. And remember, whenever we give a timeline, it's not just, oh, you're out, then you come back. It's, we got to get reevaluated. Where is he now? Where is his strength level? All right, it's going to be a ramp-up process, the whole nine yards. Like, this is interesting now, theater for Golden State, because what do they do, right? Do they say, all right, trade deadline, do we punt and say, let's get the young kids out, or do they say, you know, let's play the young kids and just see where we're at? They have a lot of options right here, right now. And it's, you know, it's an unfortunate timing of the injury for Curry, but this definitely shakes things up in the Western Conference.
For sure. Yeah, for sure it does. And I do think you're right that the Mavericks had to think, you know, we just need a guy to go down here and there, and we need to be right there. Let's make sure we stay a little more than relevant. It's a big issue for Golden State. Big issue for Golden State. Jordan Poole has been a disappointment this year as a shooter, and he needs to shoot better to make up for them, you know, losing Curry. Looney's been amazing. Wiggins is starting to come back. Draymond is limited offensively, as always. Jordan Poole needs to deliver, for sure. But it might be the death blow. This might be, you know, to ask them to – it'd be great for narrative purposes for them to be the eighth seed or play-in and get to the NBA Finals.
But
Cinderella stories don't happen much in sports. They just don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just don't.
I wonder, so they're game above 500, you know, and if he has to miss a month, right? Now the good news they have is that it's during All-Star month, so there's going to be that natural week off anyway, so not going to lose a ton of games there. But, right. You know, you're looking at maybe 10, 12 games, right? Like, they go 5-7 or 4-8. Like, that's not very good, right? That's putting you now below. Yeah. You're out of the play-in look now. And so I think this is going to affect them come trade deadline, right? Like, now what do they do? Do they say, no, we think Curry will be back and let's just get that bit? Or do they say, let's just play these kids, see where we're at? And I think you can't plan for injuries. So this is something that's got to, I'm sure Bob Myers is a smart guy. You have to have a plan B. Right. I'm sure they have some kind of backup plan, or in case of emergency, break glass. I'm just sure they didn't want to have to use it at this point.
Yeah. Stinks. Yeah, we wanted them to start peaking just as a fan. Like, you want Golden State to be there. And there's no silver lining in this. Not rest, nothing.
And you wrote about it even before the injury that the roster as it stands, so it's like going into the trade deadline, Curry was healthy. You're like, they had to make a move anyway, because like this roster ain't winning a championship.
They're not deep enough. Yeah, they're not deep enough. They have to get more help. So that hasn't changed. Yeah, they still have to. We'll see if they do it or feel like, it's not going to happen this year. Let's wait to the summer.
And if they wait, and let's say for whatever reason, they just start, you know, losing games or not good.
Yeah.
How does this then affect them draft-wise, right? Like, are they now all of a sudden in the lottery? Do they own their pick this year? They may not.
I thought they did, but what could it be part of the Wiggins deal?
Like, maybe. I have to double check on that. But either way, it'll be interesting to see what they do come Thursday. And we'll be right here talking about it all. All right, guys, we're going to take a brief break and then we're going to be right back. This episode of True Hoop is brought to you by BetterHelp. Hey guys, Gerard from True Hoop here. If you had an extra hour in your day, what would you do? It's a hell of a question. Would you maybe go for a run, take a nap, read a book, or maybe show up for a friend? Now, depending on the day, any one of those would be a great idea. Most of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. But the question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Now, I've been open in the past with you guys about this. I see a personal therapist as well as a couples therapist for my partner and I, and both are extremely helpful in developing positive coping skills and learning how to set boundaries. Therapy empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/truehoop today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/truehoop. All right, David, you know, well, everyone knows who listens to this podcast, how we feel about the Memphis Grizzlies. But there are some concerning signs and some trouble happening in Memphis that don't sit well with me and it doesn't sit well with you. First, on the court, 8 of their last 9. I don't like
loss,
that. Look,
right, loss, right.
Lost 8 of their last 9. Steven Adams is very good, but if you can't make up for him not being there to the tune of 8 out of your last 9 games you lose, that's telling me there's something's going on that's not good. And look, I watch the games and I know their half court execution down the stretch stinks. Like, it's just not good. For whatever reason, they don't execute well, and that's what the playoffs is all about, is executing. And if you can't do it in the regular season, I'm not holding out hope you're going to be able to do it for 4 rounds in the most high-intensive situations as the playoffs. So that part is concerning me on the court. Off the court, it was reported by Sam Amick and Bob Kravitz of The Athletic that the NBA did an investigation into the incident after the January 29th game against the Pacers. You guys are familiar with that. We talked about it on the show. During the game, T. Morant and Devontae Pack, Devontae is a friend of John Morant, got into it verbally with some players on the Pacers. Andrew Nembhard came over. A bunch of guys were just jawing back and forth. Right?
Nembhard went over and told his dad to shut up because he was talking a bunch of shit to him.
Right.
And Ja didn't like that.
And remember, we talked about this, right? T's getting to that point now where it's like, all right, my guy, you're doing a little bit too much. Like, this isn't about you. Like, it's about your son. Okay. So there's that piece. Allegedly, after the game, there was people who aren't familiar with how this works. In all these arenas, when you go through the bowels and you come out the team buses, right, there's often, you know, players are coming through out the locker room, through the tunnel, down in the bowels, onto the team bus, which the Pacers would have because they were away, to take them to the airport to go wherever their next game is. Players in the Pacers traveling party were saying that two SUVs drove by them that contained Ja Morant and this Devontae Pack individual. And before they got into the SUVs, verbal altercation continued between Pacers players and Ja Morant and his associate Devontae Pack. Okay, as they drive away, a laser light, the little red beam that everybody's familiar with, was shined on members of the Pacers traveling party. And, you know, one of the reports said someone said they feared for their life. They wasn't sure what that red laser was attached to. Another person in the report said it was 100% a gun. Well, the NBA did their investigation and they could not corroborate that, right? The NBA was very clear in saying, look, we know that something happened and there was a verbal altercation. And because of that, Devontae Pack is now suspended banned from coming to the arena for at least a year, I want to say. But they can make no definitive conclusion that there was any weapon or anybody was threatened with any weapon. This is problematic because the Grizzlies, as everyone knows, very talkative team. They're the shit-talkingest team in the league. And Kendrick Perkins said this about them last year. He's like, look, y'all aren't gangsters. Why do you talk like you're gangsters? Right. That was a very just play ball like that. You want to talk
is
trash?
That what
whatever.
That's what he said. Okay.
He said you guys are not gangsters. Okay. This type of element where people are speculating that was something attached to a weapon, this does not bode well. Also, Ja Morant this summer at his house, there was a basketball game going on, and allegedly, a teenager who was there threw a ball, hit Ja Morant in the face, and Morant allegedly punched the kid in the face and continued to strike him while he was down on the ground. The kid has filed suit. Now, I want to be clear about something. Anybody can sue anybody in this country for whatever reason they want. I can file suit against David Thorpe right now and go to a court because he said, I hate your gray shirt. It doesn't mean the suit has any merit, right? A judge sees it like, this hell's nothing. We're tossing this out. I don't know where that process is, but a lawsuit was filed. Doesn't mean anything happened. Doesn't mean it didn't.
Well, Ja told the cops that he did. I did punch him.
Right. Because but I was defending myself.
Yeah. He threw a ball.
Right.
I punched him.
Right.
And was defending myself. That's all we really do know. But I go on. Yeah.
Point being, David, I don't like all of this going on around Ja Morant. You are the face of one of the league's up-and-coming premier franchises. And look, everyone knows me and listens to what I do and listens and reads what I write. I am not into respectability politics and any of that bullshit. However, when you are the face of a franchise, there's certain responsibilities that come with that. That's just how it goes. And you cannot be the person that is involved in this type of activity or associated with it or even being brought up anywhere near it. That's just, that doesn't bode well for you. Doesn't bode well for the team. As David, as you said to me off air, if you're the 12th or 13th guy on the end of the bench, fine, cut, get rid of you. I don't care. Move on. We can't do that with Ja Morant. So you have to be better and you can't be associated with this kind of thing. And this is, again, I'm not saying anything definitive. All I'm saying is I don't like these signs. And where there's smoke, there's generally fire.
I don't know if I said this after the whole incident with the Pacers on the court with his dad, but I spoke to an NBA player who's got a father that really follows him closely, mm-hmm. goes to a lot of games. And I said, where does your dad sit? And he said, just trust me, coach, he would never sit on the court. And if he ever sat on the court, he would never say a word, ever. And I said, well, how do you know that? He's like, I would tell him, you're not just a fan. You're the father of a player on the Correct. Court. Shut your mouth and watch the game. Cheer for me.
Mm-hmm. Don't be engaged in the other guys.
Yeah. It's just not what we want. Doesn't serve any good purpose. And I think you have a reason to be concerned. My concern is Ja, he's had almost a meteoric rise. Mm-hmm. I did not realize he wasn't a five-star recruit. I thought he was because I don't follow high school.
He was not.
I've been corrected. So he's gone from being, come on, mid-major player, low major. That's low Division I where he went. Well, you know, it's probably mid. Lower mid, anyway. They're not going to win a championship, and that's for sure. The teams from their league almost never make the round of 32, much less the Sweet 16. He went from that to number two pick in the draft
mm-hmm.
to All-Star, All-NBA, mm-hmm. Rookie of the Year, the mm-hmm. whole thing. And he... It's cute and funny, some of the things he said about the smoke and whatever.
Mm-hmm. We don't duck smoke, we climb up the chimney, all that. Yeah.
It isn't so cute when you're 27, 28, 32. Mm-hmm. Like, as a coach, as a dad, too, we look down the road. Had that incident with the Pacers happen, and afterwards he said, listen, I don't love it when a guy tells my dad to shut up, but the truth is my dad needs to not do that anymore, and I don't want to ever talk about this again. And then talk to dad. Say, dad, the next time there's an incident, you're never sitting on the court again. I can't control road games. I control home games. This is my arena now. I can't have that. Had he done that, I think he'd have been better off. He's gone the opposite. Mm-hmm. If he was in the vehicle, which I have not confirmed, but mm-hmm. it sounds like he was in the vehicle.
Right.
And even if they were just fucking around with a red laser, which 50-50 at worst it was. Come on, Ja. Like, that is not appropriate. Mm-hmm. This is... People have, and I don't think in the basketball business, it's happened in college, but in the music business, dudes get killed for over sure. machismo.
For sure.
And false offenses.
Bravado and,
so forth.
And yeah. tough guy and all that Come stupid on. Crap.
Just, we don't want any part of that in this league. For all the reasons that are obvious to everyone. So I think they've lost 8 of 9. Ja, humility, as I always say, either stay humble or get humbled. You've been humbled. Your team sucks right now. And you don't want that pressure, Ja. You may act like you do, Mr. Tough Guy, but you don't want that pressure of going into a series where you're favored to win as a 2-3 seed, 3-seed and 4-seed, and you're shooting 28% from 3 5 games in. You want that? I don't think you do. Why would you want that? You'd much rather blow everybody out and play great. So you're just creating more of a potential problem for yourself by bringing these things into it. And the last thing I'll say, And I am not denigrating anyone with the Morant group. I don't know any of them. But I do know that I spent some time reading stories about John Belushi and his people, and which were and Chris Farley and his people. Very different issue. These were drugs. These guys were absolute drug addicts. And I've listened to the Adam Sandlers and David Spades and the people closest to, and Dan Aykroyd, closest to those two very famous celebrities, say that we couldn't even hang out with our friend. Chris Rock, they all were saying this, that we can't hang out with Farley when he was with those people because it just looks bad for us. We nothing good's going to come from us. These people were zombies. They would just do drugs all day and night. And there was almost like a tug of war between the two. So you're allowed to stay friends with your past, but you also have to recognize who you are going forward. It's a challenge of anyone that gets to be as famous as you are now. And there's a responsibility to that. Not to mention the fact that you don't want to be seen as a guy hanging out with people that are so offended that some player told a dad who wouldn't stop talking to shut up that you bring a gun or even pretend to have it, which is what it probably was. No one's going to shoot anyone.
Right.
With John Moran in the car. Right. But just pretending that is a lack of recognition for what reality dictates. You want to get above that fray. And the last thing I'll say on this, I had a player who was once a second round pick whose dad had been in jail his whole life, basically. Got out of jail right when the player got drafted. And the player who I trained signed a 2-year deal with his team and played a lot as a rookie. It was great. And just stopped kind of working hard, but very talented player. And the dad called me one time complaining. The player was on his second team. I helped him get a deal for the second team when his first team drafted for someone in his position, and he was no longer in the rotation. So they traded him to another team that needed him, and then he was released, and now another team was looking to get him. And we got him on the team. I talked to the GM. We got him on the team, and he wasn't playing at all, Gerard. And the dad called me once and said, They want my guy to kiss ass to the head coach. My son doesn't do that. They want to be, I think the player then with Daryl Armstrong was on the team. Mm. Remember Daryl Armstrong?
Mm-hmm, of course.
My son ain't no Daryl Armstrong. I said, so you're telling me he's not willing to be, I think in Daryl's case, a former CBA player that's been in the league a decade because he plays the game, that political game?
No.
All right, well then enjoy the unemployment line for the NBA. Well, because if you're not willing to do that, you're not going to be around long. And he wasn't. He was in Europe and never came back to the NBA again. Very talented player, too. You got to play that game a little bit. Forget about being the superstar. Anyone does. To be a superstar, you got to take it another level. So I hope that this is I hope someone in Memphis sits him down, Gerard, and says, and not just Ja, everyone. Like, guys, all this talking, what has it done? We've lost 8 of 9. Can we play basketball? Can we, all the energy you're spending on that, can we spend on defending and understanding the scouting reports or whatever? It's a good time to do that.
No, I'm with you 100%, David. I just, you know, I get it. It's competitive sports, alpha males, it's all that. But you can be tough without adopting this sort of persona, right, that is outside of whom you actually are, right? It is, you don't need to portray that to be tough. Steven Adams is super tough and doesn't portray any of that, right?
Right.
You don't need to do that.
That's right.
Exactly. Right? Like, you can just be tough in your play. How you stand up for yourself, and you're like, you don't need to add this extra, like, it's just unnecessary. And again, to your point, look, teams already don't like you guys because you talk too much. You start adding this, look, teams already want to kill you and beat you because it's the NBA, it's competitive. They're going to be extra juiced up to get you guys. And to David's point, look, you'll see how quickly this whole thing changes for you. You were the cute story last year, second best record in the league, all that. Yeah, okay. Screw around this year and be a top 2 seed. Yeah. Go into a series you're supposed to win and you lose and play bad. Oh, this ain't going
to
end well.
No need to bring that on yourself. I say this all the time. This is something dads, well, moms too, of course, we talk to our children about. I talk to my players about. Life's already hard enough. We don't have to make it harder. You know, there's that scene in Good Will Hunting when Robin Williams, the therapist, is talking to Matt Damon's character about Will. About getting beat by his dad, and he said his dad would put was it a rope and a belt or a wrench, and say choose, and Williams said I would take the rope or the belt, whatever it was, and Damon said no, I'm taking the wrench because fuck you. Well, that's why he needed therapy, among many other reasons. Mm-hmm. Like, no, don't make it harder than it already is, and yet we have players that do that sometimes. So this is where we'll find out what kind of leadership exists from ownership on down. Like this has to stop. We don't want to be associated with this. Yeah.
100%. You know, speaking of machismo in the league right now, David, it's been a lot of fights and things going on in the NBA over the past week to 2 weeks. And look, part of it is, God, these guys need a break, right? You can see it. Like a lot of it is, I'm sick of seeing these people. Like I need, like, and for the guys who don't go to All-Star, this is definitely a time where they go to a beach for a few days and just get their mind away from basketball.
Right. Or, and I'll tell you, when my son had his first ever break from college basketball, I said, I'll send you wherever you want to go. Like, you deserve a break. Like, I just want to go home and veg out, eat mom's cooking, and not have to think. And he was 20 years old, which is the age of a lot of these young players in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to an NBA player recently. I said, you going to beach somewhere? He said, I just want to go home, eat my mom's cooking. He's 23, 24, whatever. Eat my mom's cooking and have no responsibilities. That's all I want. Yeah. And that's exactly what I'm sure he'll do for the break. These guys are dying for that.
They need it.
Yeah. They're mentally beat.
They are mentally beat. So we saw Dylan Brooks get into it with Donovan Mitchell. He's suspended. Speaking of the Memphis Grizzlies, again, this is not good, Memphis. We saw Austin Rivers and Mo Bamba get into a fight. They both been suspended a few games. Look, and we talk about it on Troop all the time. Look, we know you got to be tough. You got to do all those things. But all this false bravado, machismo, this is not. Look, if you want to do all that, act out, and you want to fight, go be MMA people, right? You have the physical bodies to do that. Train or box or whatever. Go into combat sports. If that's what you want to do, do that. This is not a league for that, right? This is a league for basketball. We get it. Things get physical, what have you, but cooler heads have to prevail in these situations.
You know, I'm just a simple ball coach and a teacher, and I always look at opportunities to teach. That's how I see the world. So when I was coaching my kids who lived in the projects of St. Pete, and then later on helping lots of the AAU and other high school teams who came from every walk of life, we would talk about this issue because these were teenagers who really needed guidance. So sometimes they had great parents. Sometimes they had no parents. I was at a wedding once with my wife in Austin, Texas. And my family, now we're a Jewish family. We can drink. And she came from a family of non-drinkers and she didn't party in school. She worked and dated my sorry ass. So my family was pouring the vodka. They had a big, you know, very expensive vodka bar, like with the ice sculptures and everything. Yeah. And my wife had too much to drink, and she was in her 20s. And we were flying home, and she got sick on the plane next to me. And I held her hair, and I cleaned up after her, and we went into the airport. We wasn't a direct flight, and we got new clothes for both of us. And I was with her every step of the way and never made her feel bad. And I would tell my players, I'm the least macho guy you'll meet, but I was a fucking hero when my wife needed me to be one, and I didn't have to throw a punch to do it. And you know what? Most players really listen to that. And I understand the other side of it. I mean, I've had players who told me stories about living near gang lines and everything. I get all of that. But there's no place for any of that. The league is already so hard and violent. Legally violent, but still violent. Control your emotions. Did you like Austin? I thought Austin Rivers was very eloquent on his post-game press conference.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know this, David. Every player knows in the league, trash talk is, they're all fine with it. You grew up playing basketball.
You don't even hear it.
It is what it is. But there is a line verbally you know not, and everyone knows it. You all know it, and you know what not to say. You know that.
Yeah.
And so why go there? Why are you going there to start unnecessary? And not only that, now you're going to get fined and lose money. Like, why? It's just all stupid.
When you watch games, when you see a guy make a three in front of the opponent's bench in the corner on the wing, and they turn and say they're turning, you can't really hear them, but you see them look at the bench. Oh, they're saying something.
Oh, 100%.
Why? Because the bench said something.
Yes, they said something. Yes, 100%.
I have never once suggested to my player that you should talk to the player shooting, nor should you answer back. It's just something they do. I wish they wouldn't. My teams wouldn't. Like, can we just play the game? I don't need to give them any more emotion. You're not, they've heard it all before.
Right.
Like these, when you bubble up to the NBA, you've been the best player on your team for much of your life in most cases. They've heard it all before. I used to always say with JJ Redick, there's nothing that dude hasn't heard.
Oh, my goodness. Nothing.
You're not going to get into his head. In fact, you'll probably just feed the fire. And many guys will say, I love it when they talk shit to me. It narrows my focus. Why would you do that? I would say the same thing about, I would never call a timeout before free throws or a field goal kick. They all do. It's stupid. That's what they need. That allow them to get their mindset in their routine. Instead, make them do like a crazy fire drill. Don't let them get slow their heart rate down. Lock it on their form. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they call timeout. Mm-hmm. So to me, anything helps them narrow their focus is a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know, guys, anyway, craziness. Last thing before we go, you're excited about something happening in Cleveland.
Yeah.
We like, obviously, of course, Donovan, Evan Mobley, Darius, all the whole nine. Jared Allen, Isaac Okoro is starting to shoot some threes and make them.
Yeah.
Look, if he becomes the answer at small forward and shoots, I don't know, 37 or 38% from three and is playing good D,
look out. He's a very good defender.
Look out.
Rough and tumble guy, does the dirty work, dives on the floor, all that. I think he's made 21 of his last 42 threes. So small sample size, but ain't nothing. Mm-hmm. This guy was not at you, the 20% shooter. They're not going to guard him. So if he can show that he can make threes like mm-hmm. Grant Williams did for Boston, mm-hmm. it's a game changer for them. Mm-hmm. The way Darius and Donovan play is the model for teams that want two offensive-minded backcourt players, knowing they've got those three other dudes mm-hmm. in Okoro and then the big guys, Mobley and Jared Allen. Did you see Jared Allen's dunk that he had mm-hmm. yesterday? I watched mm-hmm. it live on TV. Like that, like a little grapefruit in his hand. Yeah. They're just machine. They're a machine.
They are.
When they're playing well, they're a machine. And Okoro making threes is an absolute game changer. If he can keep doing that, they're going to be a tough out.
Listen, they're fifth right now in the East, but they have maintained their second in adjusted net rating.
Yeah.
That defense is for real.
For real, for sure.
They can guard like nobody's business.
Yeah, they compete, and they've got the two mm-hmm. big guys inside, plus Isaac is the swing guy because he can guard some of these big forwards that score and not make Mobley do it already. He's not ready quite for that quite yet, too. He's not powerful enough. Yeah, I think Bickerstaff done a great job. Professional basketball team now.
I am excited to see them in the playoffs this year. It'll be their first year as a group, like getting into the playoffs. It'll be very exciting round one. As it stands, by the way, folks, round one would be them and the Brooklyn Nets. That would be round one, and that would be a very fun and interesting series. Because those 2 7-footers, you know, you got some problems. Brooklyn doesn't have a whole lot of size, right? Although they've gotten a little better recently. But yeah.
Two months and a week away already.
I know. It's crazy. We're it's exciting. It is exciting. I think. I mean, if you had to say right now, who would you bet on to win the championship? Who would you bet on right now?
I would sprinkle my money between Boston, Milwaukee, and Philly right now. Yeah. I think I want to see Middleton more. Because I was off them, mm-hmm. but if he continues to move in the right direction. They were my pick to start the season. Boston is very, very good, both sides of the court.
Yes.
And I still, no one else believes in Philly, but I'm not, we'll see what they do in the trade deadline, but I think they've got a lot of depth and Embiid and Harden knows what he's doing. I would sprinkle my money on those three teams. Yeah.
No, I think I would stay there too. I'm just not a believer in anybody in the West right now.
No.
This is, we talked about Denver can't guard.
No.
You know, that's who I'm focused on. All right, folks, a little programming note. We will not have a show on Thursday because Thursday is the trade deadline. Instead, we'll have a show Friday. So it'll come out Friday. We'll record it Friday morning, and it'll come out early Friday afternoon. We'll recap all the trades, the moves, what have you, and look at it. David will, of course, use his big basketball brain to tell you what that might mean for those teams going forward and, you know, who's going to potentially hoist that Larry O'Brien trophy in June. You know, but as you said, you heard where we're leading right now. Those three East teams look pretty good. Barring anybody doing anything crazy going forward. All right, folks, we will see you on Friday. Take care.